Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Voltaire, Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. We're just reading through. This is probably episode 4. And I'm reading, he covered the life of Voltaire. And I'll talk a bit about more philosophers to put you in context first. Then his life as Voltaire. His name was Francois-Marie. And when I quipped about the name, they said, oh, look, heaps of French people have Marie in their, French people have their Marie in their name. And they reeled off half a dozen French people, which I'd never heard of before. So that just puts me in my place as a bit of an ignorant person. And then they went into his basic philosophy. There's the, it's 2.5. Let's go into it. There's different sections of his philosophy. Okay. In reverse order, his, look at, his view on Newtonian empirical science. It's interesting. I have a few comments about this. His view on, it looks like, skepticism, which is rather than rational naivety, which is put forward by Descartes and Kant. Hedonism, which is sort of just have sex and have the best various wine and stuff that your position society, sort of, I believe it's an apologistic view, and liberty, the right for free speech, and that type of stuff. And so we're going in towards the science without metaphysics. Now I just want to put you into a sort of a framework here. So we're dealing with philosophers, and there seems to be a thing that as a scientist, you're looking here and you say, oh, they've left an imprint, sort of like a fossilization. Now, rather than the bones and imprints, they've actually written works, or have people have written commentaries about it, or they've written things which is endured in culture. This is over time, sort of like the various Greek plays, Plato. These people think they've written things down. And pretty much like a anthropology or the paleontology, you become aware that you can see that they're reacting and they're living in an environment, and there's a whole lot of what you call soft tissue culture, which isn't preserved. And so there could be actually people in history who've had some very incisive views, but they haven't been written down, and they haven't necessarily connected to overarching themes. And so I just, you know, he fits in all those things. But before we get overrun by looking at philosophy, we're, our current existence is that there's a lot of soft tissue things around us which are not enduring, will survive, are artifacts of our age. And similarly, there was artifacts of their age as you go back. So there seem to be enduring themes. And just off the top of my head, I haven't really thought this out ahead. There's the ability to write things down, put it in a structure, and then also get a school around it. You need this sort of group of things to form an enduring philosophy and connect in. So in Voltaire's group, he has, because he's dealing with a political thing, or with a, it's not dealing with a church, but with a, something akin to a church. This is, the royal ancient regime. He's got a framework of audience. They're very interesting in what he has to say, because it's controversial. You know, if you have an equally good philosophy and no one understands it, that will disappear. And then he writes things down. Now, Socrates didn't write things down, but this is going back to ancient Greek, around 500 BC. So Socrates is of a sort of a very famous school with Plato, Aristotle, and Aristotle became the sort of the philosophical application chip of medieval philosophy. And so this school is very important. But it's interesting that Socrates didn't write things down, but he had followers who did eventually go into the writing down scheme. But if those philosophers, if he didn't have followers, if they didn't write things down, Socrates would have been lost. And the interesting aspect is also something which I've picked up is that to be into philosophy, you have to have, you can't be hand to mouth. You can be a philosopher. Oh, I don't know. This philosophy of conflict. So I'm thinking of Martin Luther King, and all those different aspects there. He's got a conflict. He's got an issue to speak about. So people may be interested in the issue, and then the philosophy, the issue may disappear, and you're left with the philosophy, like the wrapping, the philosophical wrapping paper. The issue gets solved, you know, falls apart, and you've still got the shell, which explains what's going on. So we're going through an overall thing, and philosophy has in amongst it another thing is philosophy is maths. Like maths has really maths and science, but more particularly maths, and then maths in intrusion to science. So our view of science is intensely mathematical in that sense of we see particles as wave functions, or electron as a wave function. It's become intensely mathematical, but maths has its method of maths thinking has to be in some extent philosophical thinking. So these have been really intertwined. And of course, Voltaire is not a strong maths person, so that's an interesting aspect to it all. But also, it's where philosophy intrudes. You know, sort of, why is there a pushback against philosophy? Well, it intrudes in the natural order of things. That if you were, let's just say, the worst case, you were bullying someone. And you, in order to bully things, you have to keep a watertight philosophy around that person, or a system of thought that person can't. To keep someone down, you have to actually control the philosophy space. So philosophy is a social battleground, and in that case, devices which fulfil the role of social control, like religion, come into conflict or synergy or some sort of complex relationship with philosophy. And the complex relation is that religion dictated the style of philosophy, which was, religion was very deductive reason, from the top down, God exists, therefore blah 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 blah, give us your money, or I'll burn your house down because of God, etc. So religion came in saying, well, you can only think, apply philosophy in this religious way of thinking, which is a very much a rationalist viewpoint. And it's sort of very interesting in that this, rather than pushing back, people sort of think that Newton was pushing back against religion. He actually went ultra-religious and actually experienced maths and the universe in a spiritualized, decontextualized things, that things moved because they moved, and he was celebrating the actual movement as a sign of God. He said, I proffer no hypothesis. I've been struggling to think of his exact words, but it wasn't that he was a-religious, he was ultra-religious. Religious in pretty much like the Protestant view of religion, where it's an individual experience, which is rather bad if you want to organize people and have a straight structure. You want basically a structure of thought which allows the person at the top to direct someone at the bottom. So you need an unbroken chain of philosophy down there. And basically, the Newtonian revolution was that everyone can have a spiritual experience of science, because there's a democracy of doing experiments. The thing of experiments is you can look at it from induction, but it's also a way of democratizing science, because anyone can do an experiment and anyone can observe, and they have to be educated in this democracy of nature, rather than nature being interpreted from the top, like religion and all those sorts of things. And that rationalism is also like a chain of command, the great rationalists there. Voltaire, who is a man of the age, look, sort of put him almost like a, like he's obviously not in the league of Oprah or David Letterman, but he is a social commentator, someone who's very much involved in society, and the issues that I've talked of there really cover what he's saying. Just going to have to walk out of the sun. It's actually early in the morning, but it's quite a lot of sun beating down at the moment. So there's this aspect of what Voltaire was, and I don't and so just extending the view with a media personality, what should we call this, a shock jock, somebody gets on the air and says something, when you see it, he was what was called in that time a man of letters, that he would produce opinions and people would read those opinions. So he was really sort of a philosopher slash media mogul. He produced plays and poems and produced a sort of fantasy allegory in people's minds. I suppose what the fantasy I see seen that as is people who sees them as morally outraged at this person, at that person, having a stance, and therefore the logic or philosophy of rage, which I see a lot of these right people going. Not that I agree with them or disagree with the actual technique, but the actual methodology is one to be really raged. How dare they do this? That person has to be put down. They put in a few outrageous statements and then they get back to a bit of rationality, because they're not pulled up. And so Voltaire's letters, he was kicked out due to defamation, scandal, from what he said. And you have to actually read it. So one also has to understand the weird and wonderful mixed up court. As these people were becoming enlightened, the Enlightenment was a reaction to sort of ultra wealth, sort of stupidity of celebrity. So you have to think of, if you think of the Kardashians at the moment, the court of Louis was sort of like the shock about how they can actually be stupid, and then everyone says, yeah, that's okay. And there's a bit of a shock at someone being stupid and being accepted. So we have sort of that, we have a sort of parallel behavior standard for celebrities. They had a sort of a parallel behavior standard for the aristocracy. So aristocracy, I don't know where aristocracy comes from, Aristotle. I'll just have to remember. That's something I've forgotten. So let's read. I'll just check my memory again. So it was liberty, hedonism, Newtonian science. There was a third one in there. I can't quite remember what it was. But we're on the fifth one here, which is, and it's probably the last, towards science without metaphysics, that is essentially, what Newton did was, he just enjoyed science as it is. So it's sort of like, just enjoying pop music. Oh, I must admit, science without struggling to understand it, and just enjoying it is a bit like listening to music, for me at least. Voltaire also contributed directly to the new relationship between science and philosophy that the Newtonian revolution made central to the Enlightenment modernity. Now, this is a really important thing in that a lot of the baggage, cultural ideas embedded in science, the values embedded in science, are those of philosophy which came before science and philosophy separated. That's my opinion. Especially important is his critique of metaphysics and his argument that it be eliminated from any well-ordered science as you get. At the centre of the Newtonian innovations in natural philosophy was an argument that questions of bodies per se were either irrelevant to or distracting from a well-focused natural science. And I think we have a different view here that speculations are good, but you can't get there, or that we, in fact, the science is so sophisticated now with the Higgs boson, this general relativity, that you can get there, but we can talk about the track there. Against Leibniz, for example, who insists that all physics begins with an accurate and comprehensive conception of nature of bodies as such, Newton argued that the character of bodies was irrelevant to physics, since this science should restrict itself to quantified description of empirical effects only, and resist the urge to speculate about what that cannot be seen or measured. That is because, you know, that's not just... Newton actually doesn't believe that. He believed it because of his religious beliefs. Pretty amazing. So we have put in a scientific interpretation on Newton's. I offer no hypothesis. Newton's stance towards science, but no one fought more rigorously for it, nor did more to clarify it, the distinction, and give its public audience than Voltaire. The removal of metaphysics was central to the overall Newtonian science. Yeah, so he just had a different form of really focused. I suppose that Newton was not metaphysical. He just had a focus. He would talk about God's view. So Leibniz was, let's wind back the clock and see what we can do with God. The battles with Leibnizianism in the 1740s were the great theatre for Voltaire's work in this regard. And this is what you have to understand, that he's a shock jock. So often there will be no news there, but Voltaire was generating his own news, which is really interesting. So Voltaire, in a sense, invented the conflict and fueled it and got people into different sides. So you can actually fight a political campaign, like we often do in Australia, and it's about something which has been completely made up. Okay. It was great theatre for Voltaire's work in this regard. In 1740, responded to Du Chalet's efforts in her, and I was going to have to read a history of her, Institutions de Physique, to reconnect metaphysics and physics through a synthesis of Leibniz and Newton's. Voltaire made his opposition. So the chick, the philosophy chick, Du Chatelet's, I suppose how you say it, Du Chatelet's. So she said, let's see, we've got these two things. There's Newton, who's just bumbled along, slightly a bit of, what you have to say is that, one of the things we would say nowadays is that Newton was a bit autistic. He didn't socialize, contextualize his observations. Leibniz was the other end. Voltaire made his opposition to such a project explicit in his reviews and other essays he published. So it's a little like an interesting thing that he was protected by it but didn't go against it. He did the same during a brief revival of the so-called Visa Viva controversy triggered by de Chalet's treatise defending the empirical and mechanical conception of body and forces against those who defended Leibniz's more metaphysical conception of the same thing. Just inside there, I did a sneeze off air, and it's fantastic for this new heart thing, and it's much easier. It's, you know, you're not feeling you're going to cark it every time you sneeze. And I might sneeze soon after. So Leibniz's idea is, you know, whack. In that ideas are monads. So it is, gets into quantum physics in a bit in terms of his information theory, but he comes out that every particle has an infinite amount of information. When you write down his formulas, you write down the equation or the entropy of his idea, and it's just clearly, you couldn't have a cup of tea or anything. You couldn't have brown in motion or even the basics with it. But he had the idea of a monad, which was an idea, and the ideas themselves were almost spirits. That's how you go. And then it gets around Descartes' mind-body separation. So Descartes had a mind-body separation. There was just, it's interesting that a lot of these guys criticized Jesuits, but wound up living them. And indeed, Voltaire was Jesuit educated, but came against the Jesuit viewpoint. And it's interesting because I was taught by Jesuits, so I sort of know the theology behind it. In the same period, Voltaire also composed of a short book entitled The Metaphysique de Newton, published in 1740 as an implicit counterpoint to Chalet's intuitions. This tract did not so much articulate Newton's metaphysics as celebrate the fact that he avoided practicing such speculations altogether, which is, I offer no hypothesis. It also accused Leibniz of becoming deluded by his zeal to make metaphysics the foundation of physics, which I think is a fair cop, mate. Let's build a few super colliders, drop a few bombs, and work out what's going on, fill out the periodic table. In the definitive 1745 edition of his Elements de la Philosophie de Newton, Voltaire also appended his tract on Newton's metaphysics as the book's introduction, thus framing his own understanding of the relationship between metaphysics and empirical science in direct opposition to Chalet's Leibnizian understanding of the same. So these two people are shacked up together. One, it's like, what a household. It must have been like this. What a household. I've just, a thought just escaped my mind. About this, and it's interesting that people just say, "Wham bam, thank you ma'am, I'm just not going to deal with this whatsoever. It's got no relevance." Well, how do you know it's got no relevance till you've actually gone through it? It's sort of like the hours and hours of work of a homicide detective we had a few up the street, and they would just say, "Look, we just spend hours and hours just going through every plausible aspect of it." The shows show just on the main track, we spend hours following up dead ends, and it's interesting to see this. Thus framing his own understanding of the relationships in metaphysics and empirical science in direct opposition to the Chatelet's Leibnizian understanding of the same. He also added a personal invective and satire to this same position, his indictment of Maupertuis In the 1750s, Leakin's merciless turns towards metaphysical approaches to physics. In the 1740s, with increasingly diluted philosophical understanding and his authoritarian manner of dealing with his colleagues and critics. Yeah, I think this doesn't conceptualize of people like Einstein. Camille, one of the more beautiful things I'm beginning to appreciate is Schrödinger. And it's, I just thought Schrödinger, you're whack, mate. 1943 in Ireland, getting away from a bit of old Nazism and all that type of stuff. He's over there in Ireland, Dublin, and he produces a book called The Quantum Physics of Life. And he goes, but now I know molecular physics, I go, wow, let's look at life. That's really like quantum physics theatre. You know, inside you, your quantum physics theatre. But then when he said a few things, he said, life, the information for life must be atomically coded in an aperiodic crystal. Bango, he's predicts DNA, 10, 20 years before it's even thought, because then they get the crystals of life and start looking at it and start figuring it out. It's pretty amazing. So that's Franklin, who took the famous photograph number 42. Well, it's going to be 42. It must be something 47. And if it was 42, that would be over-celebrated. That would be too much of a coincidence. But it's just a really interesting that you've got this debate, yet you need more to it, yet the average punter comes out of teacher's college to teach our kids and says, like in the worst thing, it's written in the textbook, that's the way I'm going, I don't feel bad. Okay, and I don't blame you, you take a lot of effort to go through these things. While Voltaire's attacks on Mort Petit's crossed into a line of ad hominem, that's exactly what I was going to say. What the heck is this? So there's certain things that you're sort of counseled against doing as a scientist, like you get no friends if you do some of the following things. Ad hominem attacks on a non-scientist, you get no scientist friends helping you. Another thing as a scientist is that you can't, a lot of them do sprout, gosh, I'm intelligence, that there's certain things that you can't do. So that's what I would have said. And it's interesting that this is the very first thing this person says. While Voltaire's attacks on Maupertuis crossed into the line into ad hominem, at their core was a fierce defense of the way that metaphysical reasoning both occludes and deludes the work of a physical scientist. And this is, where I'm dealing with it nowadays. And if you say, oh, mate, can I talk to you about such a molecule? Yeah. What are you doing? Oh, no, don't talk to me. There's too much. You don't deal with metaphysics. Moreover, to the extent of the 18th century, Newtonism provoked two major trends in later philosophy. First was the reconstitution of transcendental philosophy a la Kant through his Copernican revolution that relocated the remains of metaphysics in a priori categories of reason, and second, the marginalization of metaphysics altogether through the celebration of philosophical positivism and anti-speculative scientific method that anchored it. Voltaire should be seen as a major progenitor of the latter. So that's interesting. So Newton did anything, you just sort of like someone coming to a party and saying, look, Elvis has died. And so half the people say, oh, let's collect Elvis memorabilia, and the other half go out looking at it. And it's interesting in that Kant provided a lifeboat for people who just weren't dinky diehard scientists. It's really interesting what that's done. By also attaching what many of the 19th century saw as Voltaire's proto-positivism through celebrated campaigns to eradicate priestly aristocratical monarchical authority through the debunking of irrational superstitions that appeared to anchor such authorities. Absolutely. Yeah. Honestly, you know, someone comes around here telling me how to live my life, and mate, I'm wearing a crown. Just go figure. But of course, if they're wearing a police uniform, that's completely different. Volunteer's legacy also cemented the alleged linkage of the joined positivist scientists on one hand with the secularization, disenchantment and de-Christianization of the other, which is sort of the French state. I love the French church where they say, here's a church and now we can stack it full of scientists. Like, what a way. The Pantheon. In this way, Voltaire could be seen as the initiator of philosophical tradition that runs from Auguste Comte, and I have to read it, Charles Darwin, then to Karl Popper, and then Richard Dawkins in the 20th century. Richard Dawkins, I think, take a chill pill, mate. It's, oh. That's the end of it, mate. I was expecting a lot more. Okay, now what they say is the bibliography. Normally I don't read the bibliography. There's no way I'd read it. It's not things, but it says primary literature, because this is Voltaire wrote himself, so let's go. Because of Voltaire's celebrity, efforts to collect and canonize his writings began immediately after his death, and still continue to this day. The result has been the production of three major collections of writing, including his vast correspondence, the last unfinished. Together, these constitute the authoritative corpus of Voltaire's written work. Hervé's Complete de Voltaire. Oh God, it's written in French. Oh, well, there's four complete works. I don't. Oh yeah. So these are written. These are compiled in various volumes. Okay. The Works of Voltaire, contemporary version. By 1901, The Portable Voltaire, Penguin, 1977. I might read that one. Shorter Writings of Voltaire. My God. Voltaire in his letters being a selection of his correspondence. My Godfather. This person's, I think what would be good is if you read an Aussie reading you his plays. So there you go, my mates, and various people at Voltaire. Something that you want to look in a little bit deeper to. People that I want to do is, firstly, it was just a complete eye-opener to me. I didn't know about Voltaire, and I think you should. I think students should. I'm just scratching my head why we don't know about him, and is there a conspiracy that we don't know about him? Du La Chalette, Du Chalette. I have to find out more about him. Hume, I have to do more. It's something from, you'll hear me chatting about Leibniz, and of course what I've done is I've gone out and read about Leibniz. Just, and for me it's interesting in that I've got this mental rehab thing which I have to do, and so it's has meant that I haven't had a thesis. I've just gone out there and said, oh, let's read about this character. It's sort of like you're reading a soap opera which hasn't been written and no one bothers to watch, and you just go back and watch different episodes, like it's Seinfeld, watching an episode of Seinfeld at the moment. We watch episodes because people in it, nowadays we've got no idea of why people laugh when someone comes in the room, or why someone pauses and gives a lot and absolutely laughs at it. And so there's these odd soapies that people look into and get some idea about it when they've got time. And I've got time at the moment, just going in, looking at it, trying to understand it. So, yep, I'll have to go back and possibly reread a few things. There's some Newton's theses I've read on Newton, and it's all about Newton's life in his own lifetime. And of course, it's after his life that the real fireworks happen. It's pretty amazing. Okay, thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.